Hello and welcome to the Unnamed Automotive Podcast. My name is Sammy Hajj Assad, and with me, as always, is my good friend and fellow automotive journalist, Benjamin Hunting. Say hi to the people, Ben.
Greetings, human listeners.
Greetings to everyone. If this is the first time you're listening to our podcast, thank you for trying something new. We really appreciate it. I will reiterate, Ben and I are a pair of automotive journalists, but more important than that, we are very good friends. Isn't that right, Ben?
It's definitely true that that's important to you.
It's very important to me. I can't believe it's not important to you.
I didn't say it wasn't.
Now, you can find Ben's work all over the internet. Right, Ben?
Sure. If you're looking.
Yeah, you have to look. Why don't you give them a little bit of a direction where you can find some of your work?
Sure. You can find my work at Car and Driver, at Motor Trend, at driving.ca, and at Inside Hook.
And you can find my work at autotrader.ca, driving.ca, and Nouveau Magazine. Ben, we've got some cars to talk about this week. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about this week.
Yeah, it's kind of a hodgepodge episode, I think, where we're going to be venting.
Do you think hodgepodge is still a term that is commonly used by the youth today?
I have no idea the origin of hodgepodge.
Yeah.
Where does that come from?
I thought hodgepodge was a glue.
Is it? It sounds like a super British glue if it is a glue.
Hodgepodge.
Are you looking it up now in your big...
A confused mixture is what my internet has told me.
A big book of British glues.
Is that what you found?
No, that's what I think you're looking in right now.
Oh, yes. What the heck is this? So, I thought it was just... Yeah, so it's just
hodgepodge is one of those words from childhood, like potpourri.
I know what potpourri is.
But yeah, you know what it is, but you don't question the origin. Like, it was just that smelly stuff you found in grandma's bathroom, right? Like, it was just in that dish that was always super dusty. You don't,
yes. Yeah, no? Yes.
Did your grandmother, was she a potpourri?
We had it in every bathroom.
The other thing I really associate with that type of thing are very ornate glass jars that are used to serve candy.
Okay.
And like, you would pick up the jar... Or the, not necessarily a jar, maybe it's like more of a, I don't know, a platter, like a shallow jar, and it had like a carved crystal top, and it would weigh so much. Like, it would, as a child, it must have felt like it weighed 50 pounds.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the candy that was heavy. It was like, this is more glass than there is in the entire house, you know, like concentrated in this ultra dense candy.
And the moment you touched it, every adult in the room would stare at you.
No, it was encouraged.
Or it was just me. Okay, I see.
I liked it because this is our second candy centric opening for an episode.
I think people are understanding our origin story.
I remember the candy, often it was that free range hard candy where like it wasn't in wrappers.
Free range.
Well, you know what I mean? It was all, it was, and it would stick to the other candy and you would have to like crack it off kind of. And sometimes you need help to do that because you're a child and you need help to do everything. But all right, where were we going with this hodgepodge? So
we've got a lot of stuff to talk about this week. I think we're starting with, SUVs, which we tend to do, but I think we're actually talking about real SUVs as opposed to crossovers,
I'm not getting involved in that controversy. You're not sucking me into that debate.
What, body on frame versus unibody, right? Or whatever it is.
I mean, the Wrangler and the Jeep Cherokee, I mean, is one of those more SUV than the other? Because one's body on frame and the other isn't?
That's what we're saying.
Okay.
I wrangled you into the conversation.
I regret making any kind of commentary.
I know.
So
but you have been driving what is traditionally known as an SUV, and that is the Land Rover Defender with some assortment of numbers after the name.
Yeah, so it's a 130, which I drove last year and which we talked about, and it's funny because this is also a 2023 model that I drove. It's a leftover that's been in the fleet for a while, but I didn't drive it specifically because of the vehicle. I drove it because I'm doing a little bit of a feature for you know, all these vehicles you can buy today that have all this off-road gear that's just kind of, I mean, not gear, but accessories that are kind of staple.
Accessories, yeah. It's like there's an automotive Claire's.
Yeah, it's like that. And you get hit with the accessory. It's like someone aims an accessory gun at your SUV. Boom. And instead of confetti, you're covered with like roof racks and bumper bars and snorkels. Like
a bedazzling gun. But instead of, it's just chrome and skid plates. And body cladding.
So I picked up this 130, which is painted flat black, and actually it looked great. I'm not a huge flat black fan. I really think it works on the Defender, especially the version that I had. Now,
Can we talk about flat, like, matte paints, though, for one quick second?
I didn't wash it. I'm scared to touch it.
Exactly.
I once got bird dew on a Fiat Abarth that had a Barth. I always say it wrong. It was the 124.
So only the hood is matte black.
No, the trunk was too.
Oh, the trunk too?
Yeah, and it got on
the
trunk.
And the bird just knew.
And it etched into the paint.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and there's nothing you can do.
I used to know somebody who had one of the matte blue Veloster's, or maybe matte gray.
It's an 11-page owner's manual supplement that comes with the Veloster. Yeah. It tells you how to care for that paint. I know it sounds like I'm exaggerating.
No, I know. And this person was like, I loved my car, but cleaning it was the worst thing ever had to do.
You can't use anything abrasive. You have to use a special cleaner. You can't wax it.
And some of these vehicles are not like occasional use kind of vehicles. A Veloster is a hatchback. Totally affordable, totally functional, practical kind of car, relatively practical kind of car. You're not going to stick this in the garage all the time and be like, well, the weather's perfectly clear.
Same with this Defender, right? It's the same idea. But what was interesting is the Defender had on the hood, it had these like diamond plate metal inserts. I don't know if those come on every vehicle, every version of the Defender. I've been trying to figure out the trim level I had, because in Canada it's called the P400 SC, and the P400 refers to the 400 horsepower straight six that's under the hood, which is a great engine that I'll get to later.
No, hold on. These nomenclatures they don't make any sense. The P500, first of all, we've already got a name for this vehicle. It's the Defender 130.
I know.
P400 SE. Then something else. And then what are you talking about?
Then you try to figure out your options. So I had the vehicle that I had. There's different. They call them accessory packs. There's the Explorer pack, Adventure pack, Country pack, and
Urban
pack. Hold
on. Is an Explorer separate from an Adventure?
Yeah. These are four different packs.
No. But in reality, when you describe an Explorer, is an Explorer just a synonym for Adventure?
No, I don't think so. Because if you're an Explorer, theoretically, you're discovering new things. If you're an Adventurer, you're just wanting to have an adventure. Indiana Jones didn't discover.
But you can adventure while exploring.
Yes, you can do that.
And that commonly happens.
You can also, you know, eat a hot dog while you're at a ball game, but that that doesn't make you a first baseman, does it? Or a chef.
Okay, sure.
Getting back to the
Defender.
We'll
talk about this when there's the first baseman club package and the chef package, right?
Audi used to offer a baseball glove leather package in the TT.
We love talking about that leather. It's the TT can be known for nothing more than its first generation leather package, which by all terms was just oversized stitching on the leather.
And if you think about it, there are two other vehicles that were very similar. The S60R and the V70R. These are
Volvos.
Yes. They had a bright orange leather that was like super in your face in the late 2000s when it first came out. I remember everyone being freaked out by that. And then there was Dodge with the Viper. They had something called Connolly leather, I think.
Okay.
And they used to advertise it, but I don't think it meant anything. But it was a really big deal in their advertising.
Okay, sorry. So Adventure package, Explorer package, first baseman package.
So I had, I think, the Explorer package. And I say I think because I'm looking at you can't build 2023 Land Rovers anymore.
Right.
I'm looking at the 2024. It has everything that my Land Rover had, except it adds a snorkel. I did not have a snorkel, which they referred to as raised air intake. But what I did have on the vehicle was the Expedition roof rack and the gloss black exterior side-mounted gear carrier. And these are the reasons why I picked up the Defender, because I'm really worried about having this equipment on a vehicle that is going to be parked on a city street, which, I don't live in the city anymore, but if I did overnight, basically on the side of your Defender, you have a lunchbox, like a plastic lunchbox. It's pretty big.
A tempting lunchbox. That's what you're trying to say.
Super tempting. Not only is it tempting, it's made of plastic, aka the second most smashable substance on your car.
Yeah, I mean, glass is first.
Glass is number one, still undefeated. Plastic is right up there. Yeah. And the only thing that is stopping people from investigating the contents of your Explorer pack is like a tiny little key that's attached here. It's one of those keys like you would see for a small padlock.
Yep.
And that's what opens and closes the Explorer pack. So you open up the Explorer pack and inside it has, or sorry, the exterior side-mounted gear carrier. It has like a little cargo net. You can keep stuff in there.
Is there an acronym for this thing? Can you tell me what are the initials of that thing?
SMGC. I don't think it works.
Okay. SMGC. We can make it work.
Yeah, you know, it is probably like a very long concatenated German word.
But it's essentially a side pod. Like,
yeah, it's a side pod.
Side pack.
But it's a precarious side pod. Like, this, my two concerns with this side pod are the one I've just mentioned, theft in an urban situation.
Yeah.
It's super tempting. Second is you're off-road, you're going by some trees, and a branch just rips that thing off the side of the vehicle.
Oh, so you're saying that's precariously mounted to the vehicle with what? Like,
no, I'm not saying it's like precariously. Like,
just Elmer's glue on the
hodgepodge
side of the
glue,
car.
Sammy. Yeah, hodgepodge. I'm not saying it's precariously mounted, but I'm saying it's still made of plastic. So if you like bent a branch with the A pillar of the Defender and snapped it, yeah, and it hit that hard, I'm pretty sure you could crack it open.
Oof.
So my question to you.
Yes, me.
What
personally
is it,
or the listener?
To you.
Okay.
What is it that you would put in this side pod that you're not putting inside your gigantic SUV?
Stinky foods.
Stinky foods? You're just like, going to attract bears.
Like a durian, yeah.
Bears are, durian bears are the worst bears. And it would definitely smash right through that plastic. So I could see maybe wet clothes or shoes.
No, but if you are a fisherman,
oh my goodness,
pack that thing full of ice, throw the fish in there,
it's
right?
It's not waterproof.
Oh no, why
I'm
not?
I'm pretty sure it's not waterproof. Good question. But I'm pretty sure
RAM,
it's not waterproof.
RAM boxes, which are integrated in the body,
yeah,
are,
which is a total,
they?
Which solves this whole problem that we're having right now.
Yeah.
Or the Rivian gear tunnel. It's the same thing, right? But like, this is very much a blister pack on the side of the vehicle. So I guess dirty clothes, weird fish suggestion, durian, what else would go in there?
Yeah, dirty clothes, I think, are the smartest thing.
Okay, the other thing about the fish...
Or boots, shoes.
The fish suggestion doesn't work because it's hinged at the top. So if you open it, all your ice is going to fall out.
Oh, yeah, and you just get a fish in the face.
Fish on the sidewalk. Fish
on the
sidewalk.
You gotta be ready. I didn't realize it was hinged at the top. That thing makes it way less practical.
Because, like, if it wasn't hinged at the top, you wouldn't... How would you get into it, right? Like, it would be like a tray, and the tray would be at your face level.
And no, it would need to hinge sideways.
Sideways, you're opening into glass.
The other
We've already established what happens when you do that.
Okay. What are we talking about? Yeah. Dirty clothes are the only, or shoes are the only thing. But my only question is, if you're going to put your boots, your muddy boots in there, what are you standing on?
That's a really good question. Maybe like a little stool that was in there before?
Yes, there you go. And then you have to put that stool, also now muddy, in the car somewhere.
So the other thing that this vehicle has...
Yes.
Is the it has
that rack, that roof rack,
the roof rack. But to get to the roof rack, there is a ladder.
That
on the other side of the vehicle, which is where the blister pack is. On roughly the same spot. It also has a key because you need to unlock. You don't need if you're really tall. You probably could like monkey your way up onto the roof like with arm strength alone, but. For most normal humans, you would need to use the key to pop the ladder down. It pops out from the vehicle and then slides down and then folds. So it's like a three-stage thing. And then you can climb up onto the roof rack. This isn't a normal roof rack. It's called the Expedition roof rack. And normally that would just be marketing, but it's actually very flat. It has very flat slats, I guess, that you could easily put onto... you could put a tent on top of there, no problem.
Okay.
And I'm assuming that's the whole reason it's designed that way.
I want to talk to you about this roof rack, which I dislike. I dislike
Why
this
roof rack. Why do you dislike it?
Because you mentioned urban environment for the...
Are you worried someone's going to sleep on your roof rack in the night and not
First
pay
all,
you rent?
And not pay me rent for a comfortable raised sleeping position.
It is quite comfortable.
I have had the normal Defender 110, I think it's called, and it had some of this equipment, including that roof rack, and that raises the height of the vehicle to a degree that makes it worrying to get into some of these parking
lot. Yeah, I didn't even try parking garages. I had that option with it, and I elected to street park it.
Okay, so these are some things that, if that rack wasn't there, way less to worry about. And then second thing to talk about, noise. It is not a it is not a aerodynamic roof rack. It makes a ton of wind noise on the vehicle.
No, I didn't really have a problem with that. And I even had the roof open for a while. It does block a lot of the light coming in from the sunroof, which I'm okay with because I don't, you know, I'm of pale complexion, and the sun is just going to eat me alive.
But you're telling me somebody's like, I paid for the, my vehicle comes with a roof, a sunroof, but I'm okay with completely blocking it?
I guess so.
That's a packaging issue.
It is, but what are you going to do? Like, the roof is over your head. I mean, it's like...
There should be a plexiglass panel that covers the sunroof, that is over the sunroof, so that you just got double glass.
What if the rack was made out of plexiglass? Is that what you're suggesting?
Maybe, but that sounds dumb.
The third most breakable material?
You won't be sleeping very well on that, will you?
Why not?
Is plexiglass more comfortable than the metal that it is currently?
I think you're probably on like a foam mattress. I don't know how you rent out the top of your roof rack to people on Airbnb, but I at least provide a foam mattress and a modesty curtain.
Okay. What did you want to talk about with this roof rack?
Well, that's what I wanted to talk about is like, do you trust that people aren't going to mess with that ladder when they're walking by? I mean, it's so tempting. First of all, it's tempting to try and like, if you understand that it opens and folds down, it's tempting to try to do that. Second, okay. It's tempting. If I was younger, which I was once.
Thanks for the clarification.
And I did not have a lot to do at night. And I was in an isolated part of town. And I saw this roof rack that was really flat. And I saw a ladder that got me onto that roof rack. I would be tempted to impress my idiot friends and climb on top of that and do like some breakdancing or like be a hooligan. And it just feels like you're asking for trouble.
Now, I live in a university town, which is to say that it's a town with a large university. However, it is not one of those partying universities that are found throughout the country.
It's more of a punishing university?
It's more like a studious university.
Oh, okay.
And I feel like in those party universities, you're right. You come home after a house party or whatever, and night at
the And there's like a Volkswagen Beetle on top of your roof rack. And it's like the dean of student affairs. It's his Beetle.
Or a smart car or something like that. A Fiat 500, just bam, right on top of that roof rack. Definitely. But I think in some certain scenarios, or most certain scenarios, people don't have time to mess with other people's stuff these days.
I don't think you're right, man. I think there's some people who have nothing but time. They're the Vin Diesels of the messing with stuff world.
You really believe that, you're really worried that out on the sidewalk, it's a problem to have a vehicle like this have all of these accessories.
I think the context,
there's stickers all over people's cars. Nobody's vandalizing those, you know, like
stickers. Where are you?
Yeah. What? Don't you have like bumper stickers on people's cars?
And are you comparing the fun of climbing on the roof of an SUV to like doing something that's vague and undefined to a sticker?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. No. I'm saying these people are, you're saying that there's people out there who are worried about, who are going to mess with your stuff.
Yes. So I think there's some context we need to add here. We live in an environment where class war is constant at this point. And a Defender 130, especially a flat black Defender 130 that looks like it's going on an expedition, yet is parked in the middle of a city, is one of the ultimate expressions of the 1%. And I feel like that element will trigger some people's reactions in a more negative context than if it was like an old school Land Rover that someone, you know, had put together or whatever. It just feels like this is conspicuous consumption drawing more attention to itself, and that would make me concerned.
Okay, I agree with you. Like, I really do. With some of these vehicles, I do worry about leaving them out in the open. But I do think that more often than not, the fear of being caught or just some wasting your
some
time.
Some people welcome that confrontation,
like that.
Sammy. They're waiting for that. They have nothing else to do at night or in the day. I don't know. Daytime hooligans. It's a $4,100 option, by the way.
Jesus. You shouldn't have said that. Now they're definitely going to mess with it.
Yeah,
if you
definitely.
Said it was like,
especially since I left a sticker in the window.
Yeah.
Just to impress people. No big deal.
I don't know. I don't think people are that nefarious. And in fact, it seems like more often than not, there is an unwritten rule of don't mess with somebody's car.
No, man, not in the city. Maybe in your university town.
But that is occasionally violated when by people who don't know the rule.
You want to hear the craziest thing someone ever did to my vehicle while I left it unattended in a city?
I mean, sure. Okay, sure. Yeah.
So this is late 90s. I had a mid 80s F-150 and I had it all painted up. It was bright red, had wagon wheels on. I was very proud of it. And I guess it looked dirty. It was parked at the sidewalk and I guess it looked dirty. And I came out it was in front of my apartment building. And I came out the next morning and there was a note on the windshield. Big, like, I'm talking like an 8.5 by 11 page note. Okay. I take it off. It's 2 pages of free range association from the individual who took it upon himself to wash my car in the middle of the night because it quote unquote looked dirty. And I quote unquote was obviously proud of it and took care of it. And welcoming me to the neighborhood and saying that, you know, some people say that NDG stands for no damn good, but it's actually a great place to live. And this went on and on. There's Sammy. The weird thing is I was not parked near any water. It's not like this is a suburban area. This is like middle of the city, apartment buildings, sidewalk, middle of the night, super strange thing. I eventually think I met the person who did this, who wouldn't own up to what they had done. But it is super odd to have a total stranger wash my... Today, I would lose my mind because I don't want someone touching my paint.
I mean, I'm concerned about... this is... Fortunately, you didn't have a flat black vehicle being touched or...
No, but back then, I was... I didn't know a lot of things about the world. I still don't. But like then, I knew even less.
If the worst thing that something happened is somebody attempted to clean your car...
Sammy, they were cleaning it with a method that I can't even identify. They didn't have a hose. They didn't have... It's the worst
thing. We all have a hose, okay?
Wow. Okay. Is that what the snorkel is for on the Explorer pack?
I'm sorry. It's called a raised air intake.
That's for your air. That's for your Airbnb, so you don't have to go up and down the ladder when nature calls in the middle of the night. Okay. Anyway, I thought that was super weird. You seem surprisingly cool with it, but...
Yeah. That's a surprise, man. That's a nice surprise. I'm telling you,
I don't think it's a nice surprise. I think it's a super weird surprise. I think it borders on uncomfortable, but it's definitely weird. I don't think nice enters into it.
That is a weird... Fine, it is a nicely weird
surprise. If you woke up in your university town and someone had painted your house a new color...
If they did a good job, like two coats? Yeah,
they left a note and they're like, it looks like you take care of your house.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I don't know. Moving on. Okay.
Well, so you were worried that somebody would come and clean your
Defender. I was worried someone would paint the Defender. Yeah. You're like, obviously it left the factory without paint.
Yes.
So in any case, other quick hits about the Defender. It's very heavy. It's almost 6,000 pounds, I think. And
have to have a note in every single review that we have these days that we will mention how heavy the vehicle is. Right?
But it's even with only 400 horsepower, it has like a 48-volt electric supercharger that spools up the turbos, I think. And it was pretty quick. I was impressed with its acceleration. I found it very comfortable to drive. I found the seating position to be great. Weird thing, the 130 and the 110, despite the 130 being longer, if you get you can get a three-row version of the 110, which I don't recommend because there's no space. Right. But if you do that, the cargo space inside is like identical to the 130. There's like a few cubic feet difference, which is super strange.
Weird.
Yeah. I think it's the seat mechanism in the back takes up a lot of floor space. I know that. I know that when I drove the 90, the weird thing about the 90 is the seats in the second row are mounted on a platform. So there's almost no cargo space that's level in the back because you have this weird flat wheel, like flat area as soon as you open the hatch and then it like pops up. So when you fold the seats down, you have a weird angle that you have to kind of accommodate with anything you're hauling, and it's a hassle. The longer wheelbase 130 doesn't have that problem.
Okay, that's fortunate.
Yeah.
Now, talk to me about this powertrain, because you do seem to be a little bit more upbeat about the powertrain.
Yeah, I went on a long road trip with it. I did some cross-country in it, and it did everything I needed it to do. Gas mileage was like 13 liters per 100 kilometers. I think the official rating is 21 miles per gallon highway, which is not amazing, but for a vehicle that size, I mean, what are you going to do? But just, I really would have told you it had 500 horsepower. Like, I was surprised by the acceleration that it had. And there is a V8 version of the vehicle available, but it almost feels like it's unnecessary.
Absolutely. I think that's fair. What about the power? Not just the engine, but the transmission. I feel like sometimes the transmission can kind of be a deal breaker in these.
It's an 8-speed automatic. I'm pretty sure it's a ZF, right? It's the same one they've been using forever. And we all know that's a great transmission, so no complaints.
Okay, cool. Now, overall pricing of this vehicle?
Oof, in Canada it was 100 grand. In the US, you're looking at, I think it starts at 82, 81, and then you start adding like the pack and all that stuff, you're probably just around 95. It's probably really similar, which is odd. But yeah, it's definitely extremely expensive.
Now, finally, you need to tell me if you think that these features were functional, were useful, are worth the $4,100.
Well, I've already
bucks.
Told you what I think about the pack on the side. I think the roof rack is cool. I think that's useful.
You'd use it? Personally, would you use it? In what situation do you use it? Sorry.
I would camp on it.
Do you camp?
I don't camp. But in a world where I camp, here's the thing. I have like the world's smallest bladder, and the idea of camping on top of a truck is scary because I would have to go up and down a ladder at night to go to the bathroom. No question. At least once. When I rebuilt my Jeep, I had to, when I took out the headliner, so for people who aren't familiar,
I don't know where this conversation is going with your small bladder and your redesign of your rust-o-matting of your Jeep.
I have an 87 Grand Wagoneer, and it has a factory roof rack. But the thing is, from the factory, the roof rack is only attached to the roof with metal sheet screws. So like, It can only hold like 100 pounds, and if you're driving and the wind gets, if you have wood up there, like a flat piece of wood, there are people who have had their whole roof rack rip out of the ceiling because enough wind got underneath it and pulled it out. It's just not strong at all. So when I redid the headliner in my vehicle, I made sure to, you know, seal it from the elements because it was straight up just metal. There was nothing, there was no kind of insulation. So I fixed that, but I also added these braces that they connect the roof rack to the top of the roof and the side of the vehicle's pillars. So it can actually hold weight now. And the reason I did that was because maybe we wanted to camp up there one day. So that's a very long way of saying that I don't camp, but I might camp. And if I did camp, this is a better option than my Jeep.
You've accommodated it. Yes. I would understand the camping scenario mainly because I know you as a track guy, not just attending track days, but visiting tracks for races, especially NASCAR. And sometimes the camp out experience is,
I'm just too old.
I don't want to call it like it's an experience that one has to like,
I'm old and I need a bed. That's
I agree with you on that situation.
That's the experience I need to engage in. I need to engage with like a duvet and like really bad cable TV in an area of the country I'm not familiar with.
Okay. So you've answered the question so well that I'm not sure where we're going with the finale of your poor Defender.
The finale is, I like the D130. This is going to sound weird. I could see myself owning it, even though I have no practical reason for a long wheelbase Defender. Like I would probably, the 110 would probably work. And so many other journalists are unfriendly when it comes to discussing the proportions of this vehicle. They say that it doesn't look good with the extended wheelbase. I think it does. I don't know why. I just actually like it, and I'm the only one.
That's fair. I think you are the only one.
Yeah.
I think it looks like a school bus that escaped the Mad Max universe.
Wow.
And I think it's a goofy looking vehicle, but if it gets the job done, that's all that really matters, right?
Yeah, no matter what that job might be. Moving on. What do we want to talk about next?
Oh, while we're on the subject of off-road vehicles, I think we need to discuss this new announcement from Toyota. Now, we love to talk about Toyota SUVs and pickup trucks, mainly because they always have the highest resale value I've ever seen in my life. In fact, before we started this podcast, Ben and I talked about one of my favorite cars, which is the Toyota FJ Cruiser, and he found one locally that was 17 years old and still carrying a price tag of over $13,000.
Canadian dollars, so like $9,000 US.
Which is too much. Anyways, the reason I bring this up is because shortly after releasing and letting the media drive the 2024 Toyota Land Cruiser.
2025.
Sorry, Land Cruiser, 25 Land Cruiser, they also revealed the 2025 Toyota 4Runner,
you're right. It is a 24 Land Cruiser and a 25 4Runner.
Okay. And this was something that we need to talk about because The 4Runner has been around for a long time and is pretty popular in North America. The Land Cruiser has been around, I think, longer, but just isn't as popular in North America.
No,
but
well, because it costs like $80,000 for a really long time. In its last
situation, right.
It was a way to spend a huge amount of money on a vehicle that had zero badge recognition and
zero street cred or off-road cred.
The only people who would know what you're driving are like people who can't afford to buy the Land Cruiser, and they would just come up to you and be like, "Oh, sick car, man," and you'd be like, "Hey, thanks." And if that's what you're going for, then fine. But in general, I think the people who are paying luxury SUV prices want a luxury SUV to go with it.
Yes, but on the other hand, the 4Runner is super popular. It has, I think, fans that like span generations. Like people like in North America just fall for the 4Runner, and I've heard of them as being like goal vehicles for some people that I've met. This is a car that they've been thinking about their whole lives.
Well, I've been really harsh on the 4Runner because it hadn't changed in like 15 years.
Oh yeah, that was the main problem. And I've always told people who love these things is that the fuel economy was awful.
Well, it had an ancient 4-liter V6. It had a 5-speed automatic transmission, something that I don't think existed in any other vehicle on the market last year. Mm. Just the 4Runner. And it was straight up garbage. Like you're driving on the highway. No, I'm unapologetic in my criticism of this drivetrain because you would be on the highway and the engine is just screaming for a sixth gear, which it should have been given a dozen years ago. And yet, no, you're going to run these high revs in a very inefficient engine. And yet the cult of the 4Runner is extremely strong.
Because the car won't die. Isn't that the case? Like all Toyotas just do not give up ever.
You tell me. Certainly doesn't give up resale value.
That's right. But there's now a new model that's coming, 2025. It is essentially, I got to make sure I got this right. It feels like the 2024 Land Cruiser.
Here is the problem. And I talked about this with Sammy a couple weeks ago, and he disagreed with me. But I think that over time, he's inceptioned this idea around in his mind and come to the same conclusions that I have, that maybe things aren't so great when you start to compare these two vehicles. Yes. Sammy, I want you to go through the length, wheelbase, width, height, and ground clearance of the 4Runner and the Land Cruiser, and we're gonna see if they're identical or not. Are you ready?
Okay. The length.
Just hit me with length, and I'll tell you whether it's identical or not.
194.9 inches.
Okay.
In length,
the Land Cruiser is 193.8. So there's a 1-inch difference in overall length. What's next? Okay.
Wheelbase, 112.2.
Identical to the Land Cruiser.
Width, 77.8.
It is identical to the Land Cruiser. It is 0.1 inches longer.
Still wider, functionally wider. The same.
Functionally the same.
The Land Cruiser is wider, yes.
Yes.
So, which is weird because the Land Cruiser is 0.1 of an inch wider, but 0.9 of an inch shorter?
No, it's like 1 full inch shorter.
Okay, fine. Height. Oh, we've got a difference here. 70.8 inches tall.
So the Land Cruiser is taller than the 4Runner by a fair bit, 5 inches pretty much. And Sammy, is that good or bad in an off-road situation?
Height is the enemy of off-roading because when you're I guess rock crawling or whatever, you kind of want a lower center of gravity
so that you can
maintain stability.
Now, the last one. What is it?
The ground clearance.
Okay.
Now, the number that I have is in feet, which doesn't make any sense.
I don't think it's feet.
Okay, the figure I have here is 9.2. I believe that's inches.
Okay, so the Land Cruiser is 8 inches of ground clearance.
So 1.2 inches less, which is actually pretty sizable.
Sammy,
we also got to talk about this figure, 8 inches of ground clearance.
That's less than my Subaru Crosstrek that is parked in my driveway.
I think an Impreza RS has the same ground clearance.
Now, I want to recap. So dimensionally, these vehicles are almost identical, except for two crucial things. One of them is height and ground clearance. Is the Land Cruiser more expensive than the 4Runner?
I'm going to assume so.
It's supposedly the range topper, right, for off-roading in the Toyota world.
The Land Cruiser.
Yeah, I would think so, right?
I don't think it's that anymore. I think we've lost our Land Cruiser that we know and love, and it's been replaced by a debadged Lexus.
This is not even a debadged Lexus, because the Lexus has, we'll get to that in a second, but okay, there's a huge powertrain difference. So
yes,
the whole point I'm making by reading off all these numbers is both of these vehicles are based on exactly the same platform.
Yep.
Because every vehicle that Toyota makes is TNGA now.
So TNGA dash something, but yes.
But
these ones in particular should be almost identical.
The 4Runner is sold in many different varieties. There's like, okay, you can get one you just want to, you can get a rear-wheel drive one if you want, yep, and just have an SUV, drive around town, you want the space, whatever. You can get a hardcore off-road one, you can get a luxury one. The Land Cruiser, on the other hand, is designed to go off-road. That's pretty much, it has full-time four-wheel drive. You can't
get a park. I thought it was supposed to be, but when I look at that ground clearance figure,
this is what I'm getting at. What they've done is they've created this Land Cruiser and marketed it as a competitor to, say, the Wrangler or the Bronco. And yet, compared to their own in-house competition, it has worse ground clearance and it's not as stable because of the extra height. I don't understand why this vehicle exists. And it gets worse, Sammy, because if you look at the 4Runner, its base engine is a 2.4-liter turbocharged 4.
Yep.
It gets 270 horsepower.
Yep, pretty good.
The 4Runner also gets a 2.4-liter turbo 4 hybrid setup. That gets
which is the same powertrain that's in the Land Cruiser.
Yeah, 326 horsepower. That's the same as in the Land Cruiser. But if you take the same platform, the Land Cruiser platform is also sold as a Lexus, the GX. I believe that the GX gets another drivetrain. Is that not true?
I don't know. I didn't know that we were getting into this.
So the GX has a twin
turbo. I'm panicking now.
It has a twin turbo V6, which is borrowed from the pickup truck. So the Land Cruiser, in terms of drivetrain, does not differentiate itself from the 4Runner. It does not do anything better off-road. I don't know what the pricing is, but I'm willing to bet the Land Cruiser probably starts at more than the 4Runner, given that you can get a lesser engine in the 4Runner. So it's going to be more expensive. And it comes down to a question of, are people just going to buy this because of the styling and not really think about the fact that they could have gotten an equally capable or more capable 4Runner for the same money?
I don't think that's going to happen. I think what's going to happen is what we both know has already been happening, and the 4Runner will outsell the Land Cruiser by a margin of like whatever it is, 10 to 1.
So why does the Land Cruiser exist? It feels like this was a botched opportunity. Toyota could have made, why didn't they make their Bronco?
You know, I think that's what, I think they took they took one idea of the Bronco, which is retro. And they said, let's bring back a retro thing.
And then everything else was just like,
as easily as we can.
Lesser 4Runner.
Yeah. I'm speculating. I don't know what was going on in those meetings, but to me, this is the only like marketable thing about the Land Cruiser, is that it looks kind of cute, like an FJ or like an old Land Cruiser, but lacks so much of the capability or the dimensions that the 4Runner has.
So the 2024 Land Cruiser starts at 56,000 actually.
And the current 4Runner is what? Is 40-something?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Let me double check. I think it's a pretty approachable starting price. 40,705.
So the estimated...
But that's an entry-level model.
The estimated starting price for the 4Runner for 2025, the redesign, is 43.
Yeah.
And the top model, the TRD off-road with the luxury options, is 50,000. And that would put you underneath a Land Cruiser.
That's ridiculous. Okay. Yeah.
With more off-road capability.
I don't know. I think they blew it. I think this is it. This is they have put yet another nail in the coffin of the North American identity of the Land Cruiser.
You want to hear something crazy? You can get a first edition version of the Land Cruiser that is apparently $75,000.
Why?
Yeah.
This hurts me. Again, as somebody who is a fan of the old Land Cruisers, especially the FJ40s and the FJ Cruiser, and even those like FJ80s, those are super cool from the like 80s and 90s. This sucks, right?
That $55,000 Land Cruiser is called the 1958 trim. It comes with like cloth seats. So... Yeah. You're still paying more than the full load TRD off-road version of the 4Runner, which has a ton of luxuries in it, but you're not getting anything back for that. Like, I don't have a problem with cloth seats. I actually prefer them in a lot of situations, but I'm thinking of if you're a customer in the showroom and you look at these two vehicles side by side and you're asking for another $2,000 for a lot less feature content.
This is not nice. This is not it. They are doing something that we don't understand yet, and they will have to do a lot of PR or a lot of marketing to make it make sense to, I think, enthusiasts and general buyers too. Right? Yeah.
Apparently the GX starts at 65 and it has that much more powerful engine.
Yeah. Now the recent reviews of the Land Cruiser have come out, and my impressions are that it's not super off-road oriented.
I mean, we've kind of established that.
I know, but it's one thing to read the spec sheet. It's another thing to read it from the opinions of the people who have driven them.
That's true.
I can't wait to drive it. Like I said, I think it looks kind of cool, but now I've looked at this new 4Runner, which looks like a high-tech 4Runner rather than a throwback like the Land Cruiser is calling for.
You love technology.
And I do, yeah. I think future is cooler than old, and that's cool.
Okay, future is cooler than old. You heard it here first on the Unnamed Automotive Podcast. What else did you want to talk about this week?
Another future cooler than old conversation that's going on is that one of the provinces in Canada, that's British Columbia, has decided to ban level 3 driving systems within the province.
What's level 3?
Level 3 is essentially a hands-free driving system that still requires the driver to take over whenever needed and pay attention to the road ahead of them.
No. You don't have to pay attention to the road.
Really?
That's the difference between level 3, I believe. I believe you have to be prepared to take control of the steering wheel in an emergency, but you don't have to stay looking at the road ahead. Level 2, there are hands-free level 2 systems, but you have to watch the road at all times.
Now, apparently, if you do get, if you do use a level 3, if you have a car with level 3 driver assist in British Columbia, you could potentially get a fine of up to 1,500 Canadian and 6 months in prison.
What prison do we have for, like, is a level 3 prison?
Yeah.
That feels like, you know, like in the early 90s when, speaking of new versus old, when they used to make all of those movies about technology where they would imagine a future where, like, technology had taken a turn for the worse and you'd be in this high-tech prison. Like, stuff like Judge Dredd, or, like, there wasn't even prisons. He would just kill you on the spot. Or, like, movies like Fortress, where they would have, instead of a wall, they would just have a line on the ground, and there would be something implanted in your body. And if you went over that line, it would intestinate you and you would die. I feel like level 3 prison... Like, going to prison because you used a level 3 self-driving system is exactly the same thing.
So, there's currently, in North America, there's only one automaker that sells a level 3 vehicle.
But how many level 3 prisons are there?
I can't answer that.
They're going to be full. The
Mercedes-Benz S-Class and EQS offer something called Drive Pilot. Even, you know, Tesla's so-called full self-driving is a level 2 system. And basically you can't use it.
I think it's not even that you can't use it. It's just that you can't even own a vehicle or drive a vehicle that has that feature, even if you're not using it. It's like, you know how, like, you can't have
the government says further testing and policy development are necessary before level 3 or higher automated vehicles are considered safe and can begin to be used for public use on these BC roads.
Now, I understand why they're doing this. We were talking about this before that we started recording, but the big issue with a lot of these so-called semi-autonomous driving systems is that it's beta software that's being tested in real time on public roads, which puts everyone in danger.
Yeah.
I think what BC is doing here is telling automakers very firmly, we're not interested in being your laboratory. And the fact that it's happening in Canada first makes sense because BC as a province is responsible for paying for the medical care of anyone who would be injured in an accident anyone who is injured due to the neglect of a design system that is driving a car and when a person should be driving a car. So they're on the hook for those costs. It makes total sense for them to say, get your stuff figured out before you bring it to BC. I wish more jurisdictions were like that.
Yeah, but I'm worried that, you know, I mean, it's just one automaker that's being affected by it right now in North America, but I feel like every automaker is investing in some sort of level three or hands-free driving technology. And the lobbying of these automakers is eventually going to catch up to the BC government.
No, this is a province that has clearly built a level three prison. They are not going to be swayed by a few lobbyists waving dollar bills under their nose. The prison lobby has clearly gotten to them first.
Now, to be fair, I do point out when I see on the road somebody who's using a Tesla, like full self-driving feature.
Who do you point it out to?
To my partner, usually.
Okay.
And she usually rolls her eyes at that person. I can't believe they're driving like that. They're usually on their phone.
Is she rolling her eyes at that person, or is she rolling her eyes at your enthusiasm for denouncing them?
I don't know. I'll talk to her about that, see what happens. But basically, you know, these are systems. We've talked about this before, I think. That some of these systems are not, I don't think they have the required sensors for safety in terms of in-car, and we talked about this in the past a number of times, in-car monitoring software to make sure that the driver is either paying attention or on their phone.
Judging by the endless stream of videos where people are doing anything but driving inside their Teslas, I think that's a pretty hard yes.
And that to me is where those systems become dangerous, really dangerous.
The other thing about these systems is no one's asking for them. I refuse to believe anyone makes a purchase decision based on whether this software exists or not. I don't think it is a decision level feature.
I think that people are. I really think people are buying these Teslas with the excitement of full self-driving or whatever.
I don't think we can talk about Tesla in a reasonable way.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that the people who buy them, there are obviously people who buy Teslas. We've had, you know, there are listeners on this show who have written in and talked to us about their experience who are not hardcore Tesla
indoctrinated
fans. They bought the car because it was a electric vehicle with good range at a price that was appealing to them. Mm-hmm. But there is a large subset of people. I think the people who are buying the car for the quote-unquote self-driving semi-autonomous features, those are people who are not approaching it rationally. I think they're more excited about the technology. And I don't think they're the same kind of people who, if they were in a dealership where they had like a Cadillac Super Cruise that was parked beside a Tesla and the prices were the same, I don't think they would evaluate based on the autonomous system. I think they would be leaning towards the Tesla because they're fans of Tesla. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
There's two distinct types of Tesla owners. And the people who are regular car buyers who are making a value-based decision, and there are people who are huge fans of Tesla, whether they like the technology, the styling, or just the company itself.
Yeah, that's fair. It's just curious to see one province, one region, taking such a firm stance, while other ones are opening up more of their streets or certain areas for public testing. And I'm curious to hear what people, because there's a couple of neighborhoods or cities here that offer here in Ontario that offer a public testing grounds, and I'm eager to hear what our listeners believe is the appropriate response.
If you want to break it down even further, BC does not have a domestic car industry. Ontario does,
right?
So already they have a relationship with automotive lobbyists that BC doesn't. California, another place that has extensive testing of semi-autonomous vehicles, it's because they're not only a automotive assembly hub, there are some vehicles that are built there, obviously Teslas have been built there, but also technology companies in Silicon Valley, companies like Waymo, whatever, they're pushing to test in these areas as well. So the financial relationships exist that allow these kinds of, will look the other way regarding safety to flourish.
Deal. Anyways, that's what I want to hear what people believe is responsible, if this is a responsible behavior or not.
I would also from anyone who would buy or has bought a car because of an advanced safety feature like that.
Yeah.
I would be curious.
I would love to hear that. So in order to do that, just head on over to our website, unnamedautomotivepodcast.com. Hit the contact button at the top there and fill out the form. And that usually lands right in our inbox, and then me and Ben talk about it and bring it up on the next episode. You can also get in touch with us the old-fashioned way. That's via email. The email address you're looking for is benjamin@benjaminhunting.com, or you can reach out to us on social media. You can find Ben on Instagram. He's at HuntingBenjamin. And you can find me on the social network formerly known as Twitter, I'm at Sammy_ha, like you're laughing.
You can also find me on Blue Sky if you're using Blue Sky. It's at Hunting Benjamin there as well.
Anyways, thank you guys for listening to our rambly episode, hodgepodge episode of car discussions. And I can't wait to do it next week, man.
And if you want to hear more episodes, you can go to unnamedautomotivepodcast.com where all the episodes we've ever done, I think it's like 370 now, are available there. You can witness our evolution over time, the last 7 years we've been doing this. And you can further find us on pretty much any podcatcher. And if you do find us, you know, leave a review, leave a star rating, make a comment. All of that helps spread the good automotive podcast word to the good people.
We also have something called Ko-Fi or Coffee, where you can give us a little tip if you like what we're doing. And, you know, we do it for the love of our discussion and for our friendship here. And we let everyone in on it. But if you feel like it's worth something to you, drop us a little bit of money there. Ko-Fi. It's ko-fi.com/, what is it, UAP or Unnamed Automotive Podcast?
I think it's the full, yeah. That was probably the wrong choice, but
okay.
Next week, Sammy, what are you going to be talking about?
It is the full name, Unnamed Automotive Podcast, ko-fi.com/Unnamed Automotive Podcast. I wanted to quickly discuss a comparison that I had between the Toyota Grand Highlander and Lexus TX. I think it's a pretty straightforward comparison, and it would probably take more than it take two sentences and nothing less. That's it.
Two sentence podcast. You heard it here
first,
folks.
That's right. But what are you talking about? We can usually stretch out what you're talking about for like almost an hour.
Wow, I don't know how to take that, but I am going to be talking about the 2024 Toyota Tacoma, which is completely redesigned, and I you know, let's just save it for next week.
I can't wait. Perfect. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.